It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And in the studio, we have Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
And Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike.
And on the phone, calling from KTNA up in Talkeetna, Philip Manning. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Okay, so here's obviously what many people are focusing on today, as is the events which are still being unfolded that involved a fire, horrific fire, involving the death of five children up to the age of 12 in Butte, Alaska. And what I've done, in fact, Zaz Hollander, who very often sits on the panel, is out there right now gathering more information. And as I looked about to see if there was anything new beyond what had been available 19 to 23 hours ago, I discovered that in Miami, Florida, Miami Herald, in the midst of the oncoming hurricane, carried this story. And partly, I think, because the AP sent it out, and I read the description in that paper, as well as the Washington Post, and of course it has been carried widely throughout Alaska. Philip, you had a mention of it up there. What's your understanding of what happened or what's going on there?
Well, I think we're kind of in the same boat. I went looking for some additional information, and right now there's just not much, nothing new, official at least. And, you know, it's one of those really difficult things, because in a situation like this, obviously everybody is just devastated when something like this happens, and there's this desire to find out more and what happened. And, you know, if you go around on social media and various places, you can find speculation, you can find unofficial things that may or may not be true, and it's this kind of war between wanting to have more information and wanting to make sure that you've got the right information. So essentially what I've heard is it's what's already been reported, is the five fatalities, all children between 3 and 12, all girls. There's no official word on whether any adults were there, whether the children were all related. They haven't even officially been identified yet, because they want to make 100% sure they've got the right identification there, which makes sense. But it's hard to have to wait for that information sometimes.
That's true. And so we're not going to try to speculate too much on what happened. What we do know is that both the Butte and the Palmer Fire Departments responded. They apparently were there very quickly. I had an opportunity to interview the city manager today, and basically, until we get official news from the fire marshal, the troopers, and others that are looking at this, we can only, sympathize heavily with the parents and the neighbors who reported that they had had some very positive interaction with the kids that presumably were among those that were fatalities. Terry, any comments?
Well, just horrific. I mean, this just affects so many people. The school district, reportedly these kids went to three different schools. The impact to those other kids, the adults that had to be there, the reporters, the EMS. I mean, they're just, it's a horrible, horrible thing to happen. And a reminder that these type of things can happen so quickly and affect so many lives. And my heart just goes out to everybody. Okay. I think everybody who was a parent hugged their kids a little tighter last night.
Right. Mark?
I agree. Not much more can be said. It's a terrible tragedy for the community.
Okay. Well, let us move on to some of the things that have been happening otherwise. And since we've mentioned Miami, the hurricane there, Irma, is approaching the Florida coast, and there's been evacuation. Significant evacuation, a different approach than taken in Houston. But in addition to that, I'm aware that as I look about the news cycle, I'm thinking, okay, wasn't there another Hurricane Harvey in Houston? And with all of the attention being paid to Irma, the people in Houston who are still in the process of attempting recovery from a horrific hurricane, have moved to perhaps the second page as the onrush of Irma, and in particular, the damage that's happened in the Caribbean. St. Martin's apparently receiving the brunt of this, an island that is reported significantly damaged, 95% of it destroyed in one way or the other. So it brings home to me the question of how long a story remains, and then we move on. And there's something about that I think justifies a little more attention, a reminder. And Philip, I'm curious, in Talkeetna, what's your sense about the longevity of significant stories when they hit?
Well, I think there's a big dichotomy depending on where the story is happening and the scale of the story. So when you talk about things like Hurricane Harvey and then Hurricane Irma, you know, it's kind of the same deal here that you're seeing everywhere else, which is like, oh my gosh, this is happening, how terrible. And, you know, there was some of the elementary school kids held a bake sale last week to raise money they wanted to send to Hurricane Harvey victims, and now we've got Irma right on the heels of that, and then potentially there's two more, Jose and Katia, lined up behind that. So yeah, I think we're going to see this continue on for a little while, and hopefully we don't run into empathy fatigue as a result of all these disasters happening one on top of the other. On the flip side of that, though, when you've got a local story, I mentioned it right before we came on the air. You asked if there was anything significant, and I said, well, there's always the saga that is Talkeetna's sewer and water system. And I think even when that isn't in the news, that's on a lot of people's minds around here because it's right here. It's in your backyard. It affects you. Whereas if you're reading about something that's happening in another part of the country or watching it on television or listening to it on the radio, you're only really focusing on it as long as it's being fed to you. And there's only so much that can be covered before the next big thing comes along when your scope is that broad, I think.
Right. Well, you've mentioned the upcoming, well, the vote that you will have on the ballot up there. And is that the only issue that will be on the ballot and that for only a portion of Talkeetna's voting population?
My understanding is it's the only thing that's going to be on the ballot anywhere in District 7 because they changed the way that the school board seats were chosen last year. What we did, changed it a couple of years ago, so that those are done by districts now. And our district was chosen last year, and our assembly seat isn't up. The mayor's not up. There's no area-wide ballot question. So, yeah, there will be. And I've asked the clerk's office for an estimate, and she's hasn't gotten back to me yet because they were waiting for final voter registration on exactly how many people in District 7 are going to have something to vote on October 3rd. But it's a relatively small number, yes.
Okay, so this will be decided then. Every vote certainly counting heavily.
For sure.
What happens?
Is there any sense of how it will go?
You know, it's really hard to tell at this point because you've got this, you've got the opposition of people not wanting additional taxes, which is a relatively normal thing, but at the same time, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the awareness surrounding the issues with the Talkeetna sewer and water system, and I think right now there are a lot of questions because this is something that the borough hasn't done before, where you've got a sales tax for a service area, and there was actually some legal question early on in the process about whether or not it could be done, and the ultimate opinion from the borough attorney was yes, it could, especially if it was voted on by the people. So I'm up here. I'm going to have our assembly member Randall Kowalki on next week, as well as Terry Dolan, the public works director, folks from the Talkeetna Community Council, Talkeetna Sewer and Water Advisory Board, and I invited the Chamber of Commerce, but they don't meet during the summer, so said they don't have any updated statements on their stance, which was initially that they favored a 1% seasonal sales tax. Of course, the official ballot question is for a 3% year-round sales tax. But
that makes a significant difference.
It does.
At least psychologically, and in some cases, very, very real to people who are watching the amount of money that they have. Well, there's another topic which has come up here, and I'm curious about the opinion from Talkeetna as well, and that has to do with plastic bags. Most recently, the city of Wasilla held a meeting which was attended, I'm thinking there were 30 or 40 people there, and the mayor has reported from Wasilla that the majority of people seem to favor a plastic bag ban. I've had a conversation most recently this morning with the city of Palmer manager, and the city of Palmer council is watching Wasilla. And on Tuesday night this week, the borough basically reaffirmed that they're watching Wasilla to determine what action they will take. And then the city may do something. And then in December, the borough may do something. But I'm curious, in Talkeetna, is there any discussion or reference to banning plastic bags or how that would affect Talkeetna?
Based on what I've heard up here, it seems like if anything is going to be done about it, that people would prefer they just be gotten rid of entirely. I was talking with someone as I was checking out at the store yesterday, and he offered me a bag, and I happened to be wearing a jacket, so I said, no, just had a few items stuffed in my pockets. He said, yeah, you know, I heard they were trying to do something about it. He said, and this is a relatively conservative gentleman. He said, you know, I just wish they'd just get rid of them. That's the one thing I liked about living in California, was to just get rid of them. Because if you go out the Petersville Road up in this area, out through Trapper Creek, or anywhere in the wilderness out here, and I mean, it is moose season, so a lot of people are, you see them around for sure. And I think a lot of people balked at the idea of a tax, and we heard a lot of that when it was initially brought up at the borough assembly, and some folks here expressed similar sentiments. The two opinions I tend to hear are either, well, why don't we just get rid of them and replace them entirely, or either that or, well, doing anything with them is just the government increasing its footprint too much, essentially. Sorry if you heard that otter taking off in the background. We're pretty close to the airport here.
No, that's fine. It's a little bit of appropriate ambient noise. Yes. Well, one of the things that we also have been looking at is an interesting move on what has been a setback change proposed. And I'm curious, and this was done at the assembly level, with a move to reduce the setback that would be between a right-of-way and whatever a person wanted to do with their property. And my impression was that, in part, this was done, and Terry, correct me if I'm wrong, it was done in part because there has been a 25-foot amount as a distance. And people have sort of been ignoring that, or it hasn't been well looked at. And Terry, further comment?
Yeah, I'm still, after listening to all the arguments on that, I'm unclear why this came up. Apparently, it must have been motivated by, constituent call. It's brought forth from the administration. And the administration does admit, along with a lot of other ordinances, they don't have the manpower to go in and enforce this, and they know that it's being breached. But they didn't. Other than that, people do want to use the full extent of their property. I get that. What worries me, and what didn't come up at the meeting that I hope to come, it comes up in into September when they bring it back, is borough seems to buy a lot of right of way, and if we start giving up, even 10 feet of right of way can be a substantial amount of money that we all are burdened with if we have to buy that back. And in a place like the borough, where roads aren't really planned out for, the next 100 years, I think that could end up being a real problem somewhere that'll cost us not today, but later. And having said that, a comprehensive look again at all of these right-of-ways and all of these things that we put in a long time ago is not a bad idea. I have a little familiarity with Big Lake, and Big Lake has something like 120 places on the map that you are reserved to get on the lake. Well, that's probably not necessary on Big Lake anymore. It was done because it was a bunch of, small little lots that were primarily used for weekenders, and now people live there. So some of those probably could be looked at, but I think just cutting it down because we don't have the people and we know people are breaking the rule, that's not a good enough reason for me. And I think Barbara Doty made it pretty clear when she said she was uncomfortable with it because, you know, there wasn't anybody that really told her what happens if somebody puts a septic system that bleeds out into the right-of-way and we want to use it for a road later. So she wasn't very comfortable with it. So we'll see what happens when it comes back. But I think they're probably getting a little push on people wanting to put more development is on lots that they already have, and on an acre you can only put so much. And you know, somebody's squeaking in this borough, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
So that's just so Philip, up there in the Tucking area where there's a somewhat smaller population, has this been an issue? Have you heard any rumblings about it?
Not about this specific issue, but one thing that was touched on that I think people very much feel up here is that the idea that, you know, the borough code can be the borough code, but it's all down to a question of not even whether they're willing to enforce it, but whether they're physically able to enforce it. You know, every once in a while, well, we do see the code compliance officer up here, you know, on a relatively regular basis, but, you know, there's one person who we see regularly, maybe, you know, once or twice a week, and there's a lot of potential issues going on. So anytime you're talking about changing regs, I think people kind of like shrug their shoulders to a certain extent and say, okay, but what is that actually going to mean? Because so-and-so has been violating this right-of-way for 15 years and they haven't done anything about it. Or, you know, so-and-so has a junkyard on their property and nothing's been done about it, that sort of thing. And I think Terry's point about the burden of potentially buying back right-of-ways is a significant one as well, especially at a time where the borough is at the revenue cap. So you've got to, and then they're already having to look at different ways of raising revenue in order to get, in order to keep operating. So any additional potential expense has to be very closely scrutinized, I would think.
Okay. Well, we'll be seeing this again. It's not over. There was a lengthy discussion, but they could not come to a conclusion. So I'd like to switch now to an indicator of perhaps how the economy is going, or two indicators. One is the Alaska State Fair, which just finished up. And we had noted, those who attended every day or often, that there were a couple of good weekends, some heavy attendance. But in between, it was a little bit light. Questioning a few of the vendors suggested that certainly during the week in between the weekends, business was a little bit light. We won't have the figures either from the city of Palmer on sales tax or from the fair about the complete attendance for a bit, but we're thinking that it might have been maybe a little light, and it might be an indicator of things that goes with a second indicator that we have just picked up, which is the number of students in the Matsuburo School District. Superintendent reported at the assembly that although 19,000 was the projected number, they were slightly below, about 199 below that. And I said, well, that sounds pretty close. That's pretty cool right now, because they still have until October to get more. But then she mentioned the figure of $3 million, which is what is represented by those students. If they don't show up, $3 million less it comes in as income. How do you have a sense of school populations in the Talkeetna area?
I don't yet for this year. In years, I know that both of the schools up here have been growing, and the area is growing. So I would anticipate they're either at or they're either the same or slightly higher, just anecdotally. But I haven't gotten with the local principals on that just yet.
Okay, so that'll be something that we'll be looking forward to getting, because before Neil Fried arrives to give us the real story of what's happening, these are indicators that will be helpful to us. The other one is tourism, the number of tourists coming through. Again, we don't have the total summary numbers, but how is tourism doing in Talkeetna? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, it's mostly anecdotal at this point, because, you know, there won't be official numbers, and of course all the major lodges are privately owned and don't like to give away too many of their numbers before they've got official, you know, quarterly reports and things. Anecdotally, it's been an up and down summer. The summer started off pretty light, and then you know, from about Memorial Day on, and then in late June into July, I started hearing from people like, "Okay, no, it's picked back up. We're actually a little bit up for the month of July," and then in August, it tapered off again, maybe a little bit more sharply than people anticipated, at least in town. Now, that may not correlate to numbers at the lodges. It's possible that people are still coming to the lodges in large numbers and are just staying there as opposed to coming into town. But I think it's entirely possible we'll see somewhat of a dip overall this year as far as people actually coming to town and spending money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sort of related to that, Philip. A while back when you were on, it was around the time that the marijuana shop was getting ready to open. How have things been since it opened? Has that all smoothed itself over?
Well, it's actually kind of come back to the fore to a certain degree because of the way that the timing worked on all of the marijuana licenses. They're all up for renewal right now. And so right after the shop opened, the High Expedition, they've had to go and almost immediately apply for a renewal, which has kind of brought that issue back to the forefront again. And as far as, like, day-to-day operations, to a large degree, if you didn't know what it was, you wouldn't be able to tell. Aside from the fact that you see somebody checking IDs before somebody walks into the door, and there is a sign that says 21 and up, but they're not allowed to have prominent, you know, displays of, hey, we sell marijuana here. And I do see, you know, just walking up and down Main Street, I have seen a fair amount of foot traffic going in and out of there. And talking to one of the owners, he said that they get all kinds of folks in there, and that it's been that business has been pretty good. So, of course, there was there's a story that did go national via the AP about some of the rift here, and there are definitely people who are still adamantly opposed to the shop's operation. But I think in the grand scheme of things, those are a small but highly vocal number of people, at least based on everybody I've talked to.
And so how does the re-permitting process work? Is there an opportunity for the public to weigh in and say, hey, we've been thinking about this and
may not... Yeah, there's a separate public process involved for sure.
And we also know that there are ballot propositions both up in Fairbanks and down on the Kenai for the borough there to prohibit marijuana growth, sale, et cetera, beyond the personal use that is there. And that'll be on the ballot come this October.
Yeah, I think this renewal thing has gotten a few business owners caught off guard. I talked to one in Anchorage that has been working on this for quite some time and had literally just gotten the approval on everything, and just a couple days later got the notice that they had to go through the renewal part process again, which seems a little bit crazy, but so I don't think Talkeen is alone in that.
Right.
Being the only operator that had to do that.
Okay. So, Philip, we've asked a lot of questions and brought topics before you, and I'm curious if there are any other topics from the Talkeetna perspective that you'd like to look at this time.
No. I mean, I think a lot of people in town right now are actually out of town because it's moose season. So a lot of my listener base is out in the woods right now, I suspect. But
right. They will come back because they will be successful.
Yeah.
Just on that note, how often do you see a moose in downtown Talkeetna?
In downtown, not very often. You go a few miles out of town. Like, my parents live about 4 miles out of town, and they see them pretty frequently. But in downtown proper, it's not all that common.
Okay.
Though I have seen one in my front yard, and I live downtown, so...
So I'm curious, Philip. Were people aware of the borough meeting on the with the fish commissioner, and the big hubbub they had at the borough right during fair time?
Yeah. Well, we ran a story on that. So yeah, I hope they were aware of it because we ran something. But and that had been a very hot topic of discussion. And it's interesting juxtaposition that was happening right as the silver run was exploding.
Right. It was the timing was strange. Yes.
Yeah. It sounds like the mayor wrote a strongly worded letter to the governor about the commissioner and the work that was being done, and asking that funding be considered for the same type of equipment that they have in the Kenai, basically sonar and that type of thing, so we can get a little more accurate count of what's happening.
Okay. Well, Once again, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Philip Manning. Thank you, Philip, for calling in.
Thank you, Mike.
And I want to thank the two panelists here in the studio, Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Well, have a good weekend.
And Mark Kelsey. Thank you, Mark.
Always good to be here.
Right. And the sun is shining so beautifully, it can't be anything but a good weekend. All right. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.